You're listening to KBOO Community Radio, and today we're here with Bridget Noix from the Friends Committee on National Legislation. Bridget is the secretary?
General secretary.
Bridget is the general secretary, which is basically like being the chair or the executive director. Bridget, welcome to KBOO.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks so much. It's a real pleasure to have you down here in our studios. What brings you to Portland?
Well, I'm really excited to be out here in the Pacific Northwest visiting some of our supporters and advocates who work with us in our network around the country.
Great. And what does that involve?
So Friends Committee on National Legislation is a Quaker lobby organization, and we're headquartered in Washington, D.C. We have our offices on Capitol Hill. But really, the power of our advocacy comes from our network of folks all around the country who work in our advocacy teams or volunteer with us to build relationships with their members of Congress and lobby them on the issues that they care about. And we work on a range of issues related to peace, justice, and environmental sustainability.
I think that your average KBOO listener may or may not be familiar with the Multnomah Friends Meeting House. Is that one of the places where you go?
It sure is. I was just there this morning.
Okay.
I had a wonderful visit, attended meeting for worship, and then actually was part of a panel with other peace activists who were there talking about peace witness and how we sustain ourselves in times that are so troubling with so much violence and war and oppression and so many issues that people are working on. So I was really honored to hear from others, veterans and peace advocates who are part of that meeting as well.
Oh, great. It's great. What other, are there other places you go around here?
Well, I was just visiting in the home of some friends, and they had a little sort of house party for me, and I'll be traveling a little bit to other parts of around Portland and then over to Seattle, I guess up to Seattle, and spend some time there. And there's a university friends meeting is up there, and we'll have an event with them as well.
Oh, great. Are you based in D.C.?
I am based in D.C., yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Wow, so kind of right in the heart of all of it.
Yes, our office is on Capitol Hill. We sit right across from the Senate office buildings. And so Capitol Hill is kind of our stomping grounds, I guess.
Yeah. So what are some issues right now that the Friends Committee on National Legislation is really concerned about? Like what are your top priorities at this time?
Well, as you can imagine, the war in Gaza and the ongoing expansion of the war in the Middle East is a top concern for us now. So we have been advocating with members of Congress and with the administration for an immediate and permanent ceasefire, for the U.S. government to use all its leverage to help bring that about, and get urging members of Congress to press the administration to end military aid to Israel in the midst of this ongoing violence.
What do you feel is the connection between the United States and the war in Gaza? What role is the United States playing in that war?
Well, the U.S. is playing a really significant role. We have been sending millions, hundreds of millions of dollars worth of weaponry to Israel. And even since October 7th, there have been ongoing shipments and transfers of weapons. Those weapons include bombs that are being dropped on the people of Gaza. So there's a real deep complicity of our government in what's happening. I went with one of our colleagues to visit the Middle East in January, and people there, including Palestinian children in the West Bank, were asking me, why is the U.S. sending weapons that are falling on children in Gaza? So this is a really significant issue. It's our tax dollars at work in this war, and the violence is, of course, affecting the Palestinian people, but it's also making Israel less safe and secure for the future.
Do you think that Israel has a right to exist?
Sure. We support self-determination for all peoples, but I think the challenge now is that there's such a violation of human rights, international law, mass atrocities and civilian death in Gaza, that the actions of the Israeli government, the military campaign, needs to stop.
What about the actions on October 7th, as well as the years-long bombing of Israel from within Gaza?
Absolutely. We have been advocating for an end to all violence, all atrocities against civilians, whether that's in Israel by Hamas or in Gaza by the Israeli government. And we condemned the attacks of October 7th immediately, and also called for a ceasefire immediately, because we knew that this war could quickly escalate into broader regional tensions and violence, and that's what we're seeing happen.
2.4 million Gazans have been displaced by this war. The housing stock in Gaza has been decimated. If people ever are allowed to return to their homes, over half of the homes in Gaza are uninhabitable at this point. 33,000 people that we know of have been killed. That doesn't count people who disappeared under collapsed buildings. Over two-thirds of the people killed in Gaza have been women and children. How can anything ever come out of this? How can there ever be any reconciliation or any repair for this? What's the future for Gaza?
Yeah, that's a really, really important question right now. I think one of the things that I have been so impressed by and was moved by when we were there talking to Palestinians in the West Bank, and we didn't go into Gaza, but we were talking to Palestinians who are all affected and have family members who've been killed, was the incredible resilience of the Palestinian people to continue to say, we will be here. We will rise. We will recover. Many people are still believing in the possibility of a future in which all people in the Middle East can live in safety and security with equal rights. What that looks like, I don't think we know. I certainly don't claim to know what that would look like. But I think what we need immediately and urgently to make that possibility a reality someday is a ceasefire now. And that's the first step, so that Palestinians and Israelis who do seek peace and justice for each other can then forge a future together. But until this horrific bombing campaign stops, that, you know, what the future looks like is very unclear.
What are your other priorities? What are other top priorities that you're working on?
Sure. So we also have been advocating for passage of legislation that would establish a Truth and Healing Commission on Indian boarding schools. This is legislation that would provide a forum for really looking into the history in the United States of a dark stain on our history of more than 400 boarding schools across the country. You really can't call them schools. They were forced assimilation for Native American children. Children were taken from their families in the communities and put into these schools. And it was really a way of propagating cultural genocide on Native American communities. We have not reckoned with this history as a country. Quakers were involved in these schools, and we are reckoning with our own role in this history. And so then we have to also do the work of trying to ensure that the truth is told, and that whatever possibility for some kind of repair can be done. So there's legislation now in the House and the Senate for a Truth and Healing Commission to be established. And we just had over 300 young people from around the country come to Washington and lobby with us on this bill, and in partnership with the National Native American Indian Boarding Schools Healing Coalition, who are really leading the tremendous work that's being done on this issue.
What are the chances? Where does that stand? Is it in the House right now? Does it have a bill number?
Yes, the bill number and all the information is on our website, which is fcnl.org, and you can find more details there. The positive thing about this legislation is that it's bipartisan. And so we do see support for it. And if it could get to the floor and get voted on, there's a possibility it could pass. And that would, you know, help establish this commission, which would then do the work of really the truth telling and also recommendations for next steps. So in a time when it's really hard to find bipartisan issues, this is an important one that we can keep pushing on.
What other issues are you working on?
Well, here in the U.S. on the domestic front, there is legislation, has been legislative initiatives around the child tax credit. Folks may remember this was expanded. This is support for families with children that was expanded and then pulled back. And the child tax credit has tremendous impact for low-income and poor families. It lifted 5 million children out of poverty when it was expanded, but then when that fell off, millions of children and families fell back into poverty. So there's now an effort to make sure that Congress passes some kind of a tax package that would ensure that the child tax credit is expanded. So we're also putting a lot of work into that.
And where does that stand in terms of support?
Well, right now, the package that we're looking at, which we think could garner a lot of support, is while Congress is looking at passing potential tax breaks for businesses, saying no tax breaks for businesses without tax breaks for kids and families. And so that kind of a package we think could have a lot of support. It already does have a good amount of support, but it's being held up a little bit by, you know, members not being ready to push it across the finish line. So we're trying to get it there.
And a topic that's constantly in the news right now is women's reproductive health, women's reproductive freedom, which has recently come under attack with the Mifepristone ruling, which kind of dodged a bullet this time, but still there's some language in there that's really concerning. Recently Arizona basically banned all abortions. There's also discussion about a federal ban. Where does the Friends Committee on National Legislation stand on issues of women's reproductive health?
So we have now new policy around this following the decision by the Supreme Court a year more ago.
Dobbs
decision. Our community went into a deep process of discernment because actually we had no position before. And because Quakers had been divided on it, there wasn't clarity. And so we had not worked on it and said we just won't work on it. After the Dobbs decision, what we heard from folks around the country in our network was the silence is deafening, that we needed to have a position. And so our community went through a long process, about a year, of discerning what could Friends say about this. And what we've come to, we're not working actively on it, but we do now have policy that says clearly that this is a matter of individual conscience, which is very important for Quakers, and that the government's role is not to interfere, that this is, we believe in the dignity of all people and the right to conscience to make those decisions themselves. So we have not worked actively on it yet, but we do now have policy that can help guide us more clearly.
So what does it mean to go through a process of discernment? I mean, I know what it means, but I'm just asking you anyways. For our listeners, how do Quakers make decisions?
Sure. So Quakers believe that truth can come through all people and that we collectively seek truth together by listening to all voices. So when we seek discernment around an issue, we try to listen to the voices of everyone in the body, we would say, in the community, and seek where that is leading us. It's really not just consensus in the sense of everybody agreeing, but trying to find that deeper truth, what we would call sort of the what spirit is leading us toward, and the belief that if we listen to all, and then often for Quakers sit quietly together and listen even more deeply to the spirit, we can find those deeper truths.
Quakers are really famous in American history for both the work that they contributed towards abolition and also their role as pacifists and anti-war voices at different times in this country's history. Where can you talk a little bit about the contribution of Quaker process and Quaker culture to those issues?
Sure. I guess one of the famous stories in our history is about John Woolman, who was one of the early Quakers, the abolitionists. And actually, Quakers also did hold slaves for the first part of their lives in this country. Quakers were part of the slave trade and the enslavement of people. And so John Woolman, though, had an insight where he really listened to what our truths and values say, which is that there is that of God, or there is that light of dignity, deep human dignity in all people, and saw that slavery was wrong. So he then went around to Quaker meetings and all around the U.S. and urged them to let go of their Quaker of slaves and to join abolition. And that process of being open to listening to all voices, I think, is part of what allows Quakers to move forward, to really listen to the voices that would be saying, "You're doing something wrong. You need to change as well."
We're talking today with Bridget Noy. Bridget is the basically the equivalent of the executive director of the Friends Committee on National Legislation, and works in Washington, D.C. with the Quakers and the Society of Friends to try to enact positive legislation that represents the values of this community. What are some other issues you're working on, Bridget?
Well, as I said, the war in the Middle East has taken up a lot of our attention and focus. We also, though, work on issues like ending gun violence in our own communities. We've worked for a number of years on advocating for increased funding for community-led violence interrupters. These are programs in cities around the country. There may be some here in Portland, I imagine, where members of the community actively work to interrupt cycles of violence and help prevent more gun violence. And so that's another issue that we've been very focused on. We also do a lot of work around funding, and we have an initiative with our advocacy teams across the country this year on addressing the runaway Pentagon spending and the
over $1 trillion.
Yes, enormous amount of money coming from our government into the military at the expense of other needs. And I don't know how much folks know about the unfunded priorities list, but basically the Pentagon gets to tell Congress, in fact, is required to tell Congress, what are all the things that the Pentagon would want that are not even in the budget yet. And this leads to Congress adding hundreds of millions more onto the hundreds of billions of dollars each year in Pentagon spending. So we're trying to raise awareness of how out of whack the Pentagon spending is right now, given the needs and priorities of so many people in our communities and around the world.
Bridget, what led you to this position? I mean, why did you become involved in this?
So I actually came to FCNL through our young adult program over 25 years ago when I was just out of college, and found myself at FCNL's door looking for a job after college. And we still have a year-long program assistant program for young people coming out of college to come work in Washington with us. And that was my introduction to how to lobby, to the idea that we could even have a voice in making policy, and that we have a responsibility to have a voice in making policy, that that's part of our democracy. So I came to FCNL as a young person and quickly got indoctrinated to the work and but also the values. I was not Quaker. I was not raised Quaker. And FCNL was a big part of my coming to discover you could put your faith into action. And so I then became a lobbyist on foreign policy issues through the Iraq War with FCNL, and did some other things, but just kept feeling called back to this work. And so I'm really honored to be in this position now.
A lot of people, maybe from an older generation, remember the Friends Committee on National Legislation or the Quakers for their role in advising and providing instructions for conscientious objectors to war, including people who refuse to be drafted. I'm not sure if people are still required to register for the draft. Men are required to register for the draft in order to receive financial aid, but do you still provide those services?
We do. FCNL does not provide those services, but there are other organizations that do. And I can just tell you, because my oldest son just turned 16 and got his learner's permit, and we went to the DMV, and in that process, there's a little box, at least in Washington, D.C., that you have to check about selective service, and it says you can opt out. And I asked them, could we see the opt-out? You know, what does it mean to opt out? What would be the implications? And I was trying to educate my son through this process as well. And I learned that absolutely, it basically said you can opt out. And if you do, you receive no federal aid as a student. You are, basically doing a federal crime and have all these other restrictions on your future. You can't work for government. So it is absolutely still an issue for young people, and we don't really even do enough about that or educate our young people enough about it, I don't think.
Mm-hmm. Another issue for young folks, something that folks are working on with the War Resisters League here in Portland right now is there was just one recent situation where they wanted to get junior ROTC into the schools. Do you do anything around that sort of issue, the military indoctrination of kids in high school?
We don't, because there's not federal legislation on it right now. We certainly oppose that, and would, if there were legislation around it, we would have policy to work on it. But yeah, certainly as the mother of two teenagers, it's an issue of concern.
Mm-hmm. What about, I know another issue that I remember the Friends were really big on during kind of the height of the peace movement was anti-nuclear issues around disarmament, abolition of nuclear weapons. Is that still a priority for the Friends?
It is, yes. And that's another legislative issue, actually, that we've been working on as a priority, and particularly around legislation called the Radiation Exposure Compensation Act. And this is compensation for communities in our own country who were impacted by nuclear testing. So there are a number of communities who still have impacts from that testing, and they have not been compensated. And the legislation in Congress expands some of the compensation that is provided for these communities, often called downwinders. These communities themselves have been advocating for this to make sure that communities in all the states that were impacted receive some kind of compensation. And we have had some progress on that bill, and we still need to get it through Congress finally.
The movement for racial justice brought up so many issues that are of concern to Black and brown people and to all Americans. One of those is issues around mass incarceration. What does the Friends Committee on National Legislation do to address the impact of mass incarceration?
Yeah. So we continue to, we have a justice reform program, and part of the racial justice work that's connected to community violence interrupters is that many of the folks who participate in these community-based violence interruption programs are formerly incarcerated folks, and they're now on the street helping to prevent the gun violence and the community conflict that often ends up with police going in and either arresting or abusing people in the community. And so these are an alternative. These community violence interruption programs are really an alternative to the militarized policing approach that we have in so many Black and brown communities. So that's one way that we're continuing to try to work on that.
What about issues around the police?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's something that's...
No, we do still work on that. There's legislation, a number of bills that have gone through Congress at different times that at least are trying to address, the very tactical violence that police conduct. So, you know, whether there are small provisions that at least can reduce the violence, stopping the strangleholding and various provisions in legislation that we track. We have a staff member who tracks that more than I do, but it is an issue that we've worked on. Unfortunately, you know, there's still Congress is so stalled on so many issues that a lot of legislation isn't moving right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot to do. What do you see for the future of Congress in the next 4 years?
Well, that's going to depend a lot on elections that are coming up and what the Congress looks like. I think one of the things we're really trying to focus on is to get members of Congress to focus not on polarized politics, but to really talk about the issues that impact communities and to listen to those communities who are most impacted. So how do we get Congress to really listen to communities impacted by policing, militarized policing, communities impacted by gun violence, communities impacted by wars, whether that's veterans or diaspora communities or communities directly in those in the line of fire in those wars. So we think that part of what needs to happen and the work that we need to do with Congress is to make sure that people are advocating and building those relationships with their members of Congress, even the hard ones, even those members of Congress that disagree fundamentally with the things that we believe or, you know, vote wrong every time, continuing to bring our voices forward into that policymaking process is what democracy is about. So whatever Congress looks like in the next 4 years, that's part of the work that we have to keep doing.
We've just got a couple of minutes left, Bridget. If people want to learn more about the Friends Committee on National Legislation, how can they find out about you?
So our website is www.fcnl.org. And you can go there and find lots of information. You can also follow us on social media. We're on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter. And you can also always, write to us, sign up for our email lists from our website. You can find lots more pathways to get to know us.
And if people want to get involved locally, is there a way they can get involved locally?
Well, through our website, you can look for an advocacy team in your area. There are some around the area here, and you can join an advocacy team and become part of those teams that are lobbying regularly with their members of Congress.
Do you have to be a Quaker in order to work with these folks?
Not at all. We work with lots of people all around the country from all walks of life, and part of being a Quaker organization is being inclusive and welcoming everyone. So please get involved.
Thanks. Is there anything that we haven't addressed today that you'd like to mention?
Just to say thank you for all the people who are out there advocating with their members of Congress on the issues that they care about. Certainly the issues that we work on, we need lots more people raising their voices on them. But also whatever it is that you care about, being part of democracy and being part of that process is important. So just to say thanks to everyone.
Thanks. We've been talking today with Bridget Noir from the Friends Committee on National Legislation and in town for a visit. Bridget, thanks so much for coming down from Washington, D.C. and talking to us here at KBOO.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
Dreams and wine was a state of mind. Oh, now you know.